listening to Viral Podcasting, the place to go to learn how to generate a six-figure income or more from your podcast. To get the latest tips and information, go to viralpodcasting.com.
Welcome, and this is Viral Podcasting. I'm Kerry Lutz, and this is show number 27. Well, since we started this podcast, we've been looking to connect with what I would call thought leaders, generally the people who are really at the forefront of podcasting. And of course, one name that came to mind almost immediately was Rob Walsh. Rob, you're VP Podcaster Relations at Libsyn. If you don't know about Libsyn, we talk about it extensively in the book Viral Podcasting. And basically, probably the leading podcast server and website for both established podcasters and as well as newbie podcasters. Rob, welcome to the show.
Kerry, thanks for having me on.
Hey, so podcasting, been around now for quite a while, 12, 13 years. I'm always amazed when I meet people. I've been doing it for 7 years and I meet people and I say, yeah, I've been doing it for 12, 13 years. I mean, that's really goes to the beginning. You've been at this almost from the start. How did you get into it?
Yeah, I started in the fall of 2004. So I started right when it started. So I was lucky enough to be there right in the beginning. And it was just luck. I just come off finishing my MBA at UConn in the spring of 2004. I was traveling for work and all of a sudden I had this free time in the evening and I just was looking for some sort of hobby. And I started to listen to podcasts while I was traveling. And then I said, you know, I want to do this. And When I started looking at it in October of 2004, there wasn't a single tutorial on the internet about how to podcast. It was one article from Engadget that said to podcast, just put this enclosure tag in your RSS feed and you're good. You know, and I was like, what are these things? So I had to learn about enclosure tags and RSS feeds. And I was a big fan of Inside the Actor's Studio. So I started a podcast called Podcast 411, where I interviewed other podcasters to learn about the art of podcasting and to the technical part of it as well.
And it really is a combination of science, technical techniques, and art, because you can do everything right on the technical end, but if you don't have the skills, proper communication skills, it's going to be an uphill battle.
Absolutely. I mean, tech just gets you there. It doesn't actually move you forward. It's the art, the content that is responsible for all the big shows.
So you got into podcasting, and then how did Libsyn happen?
Well, Libsyn started right around the same time I was starting a podcasting, and I found out early on when I started hosting, I was self-hosting on my own site, and I started getting a couple of big guests. And then this was right after the 2004 election. Senator John Edwards had just run for VP, and he started a podcast, and I got him on as a guest. And I realized my servers were going to go down. So I moved over to Libsyn in March of 2005, and I've been hosting with Libsyn ever since. And I love the service so much, and I was talking about it all the time on Podcast 411. Then a couple of years later, they said, why don't you just come work for us? And I said, okay, I can do that. And 10 plus years later, I'm still working for Libsyn.
So it turned into a career. What was really a lark and really happenstance turns out to be this phenomenal career. So you've known literally thousands of people who've been podcasting during that time.
Oh, yeah. I've talked to so many, probably tens of thousands of people over the years. With regards to podcasting and helping getting going. And, you know, Libsyn itself hosts well over 35,000 podcasts. In 2016, we delivered over 25% of all the downloads globally through iTunes and the podcast app, which I think no one else was even over 10%, to put things in perspective.
Pretty remarkable. So, and you wrote your book back in, I guess, 2005, you said, or 2006?
We started writing in 2005 and we finished in 2006. So myself and Merle Lafferty is my co-author, excuse me. And we wrote that book and published it in spring of 2006. It was an Amazon editor's choice, top three choice in reference books from Amazon that year. So it got good, really good reviews. And I say it's a collector's item because it had the foreword by Senator John Edwards, which you won't see that happen anymore in a book. But Merle Lafferty is now a very established sci-fi writer. And this was her first published book. So it's a little trivia there. But she's gotten a deal recently. One of her books got optioned to a movie for Netflix. And it's well written. At least every other chapter is well written, the ones that she's responsible for.
Yeah. Well, so the book is really the first of its kind out there. And one of the things I've heard you say a number of times is you get into podcasting, you need to treat it like a business.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to be serious about it. If you want it to be a business, you have to treat it like a business. That includes doing the extra work. Too many people just want to show up, hit record, hit stop, post, and be done. They want to spend an hour and 5 minutes on an hour's long episode each week, and that's it, no more. Well, that's fine. You can do that, but you're not going to have an audience. You need to take the time to really create great content, research, and offer value to your listeners. I mean, that's a big thing I think people forget is if the content doesn't have value to the listeners, you will not have listeners.
Yeah, well, you'll always pick up a few. I remember when I started mine and I really didn't know what I was doing and I was doing a radio show. So I was simply reposting the show onto iTunes, onto Libsyn, onto iTunes. And, I got like 20, 30 downloads and I'm like, wow, I wonder who these people are. Well, probably they were mostly people who knew me. And until it started getting into what those people out there wanted to hear, thinking about what they were looking for, it really didn't go very far.
No, and there are some shows that I listen to that I know the person just phoning it in. Literally, they're not trying, they're not caring, and their numbers reflect it. Sometimes it's just people just trying to learn how to podcast, and their first show isn't very good, but their second show, and they get the brilliant aha moment of, this is what I should be doing a show about. The second show oftentimes is much more successful than the first, because people get so hung up on the tech and just getting a show out there.
And you see that... You have to develop a certain comfort level with the technology, regardless what level you use. I mean, in your book, Tricks of the Podcasting Masters, you talk about very kind of basic hardware setups. But now, we're talking 12 years later, the sophistication of the technology and techniques and such has really, really escalated, really gone way higher, hasn't it?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I actually still use the same basic setup for recording Skype that I have in the book from 12 years ago because it's bulletproof. I take it out into a mixer and I record on a digital recorder. So this way, what I hear when I'm talking to someone on Skype, exactly how they sound is exactly how it sounds on the recording. There's no degradation in the sound. Now there's easier ways to do it. You can use Call Recorder or Pamela or other programs that are out there for recording right on the computer. But at the end of the day, they're not as good a quality as recording offline on a digital recorder. So some of the things haven't changed. Some absolutely have. I mean, we didn't talk about smartphones in there because the book was written before smartphones came out, right? So there's nothing in there about smartphones. We didn't talk at all about Facebook because Facebook had just launched. So there's some things that, aren't in the book. The book deals more with the art of it, how to do an interview and how to create content for different types of formats of shows. But the technical part of it, most of that is a little behind, although we recommend using Libsyn in there, and I still recommend using Libsyn. So, that hasn't changed. And again, how I do my recording for Skype hasn't changed over all those years, because I really haven't found anything more bulletproof that is better sounding than what we've done, what we did way back when. It took me a while to get to that recording setup. It took me 6 months to figure it all out. But once I figured it out, it's worked well for me.
Hey, so we talk about Skype. If you've done any podcasting, if you interview people, you're going to use Skype, because I think the alternatives are just too complicated and require too much expertise, perhaps, than your guest might have. But we do have a lot of grief with Skype from time to time, right?
It depends on how you set your computer up. A lot of people, they try to do Skype and then record on the same computer, run other software on that computer that they're running Skype. And what they don't understand is Skype is a share, it shares a CPU processor, and it degrades itself if their CPU is being used for something else. So if the only thing you have running on the computer is Skype, Skype is pretty solid. And if you have a hardwired connection into your computer, it's pretty good. You don't want to connect via Wi-Fi to your router. You want to have a hard connection to your computer, and you don't want anything else, any other programs running while you have Skype on the computer.
Yep.
And then you'll get really great sound. But not everybody can do that. And again, some people want just the ease of using call recorder, and you'll pay for that with audio quality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very true. Very true. So what about the post-production processing of files? How involved do you get in that?
I am still a very heavy editor. I still edit in GarageBand, different version than when I wrote that book, but I still edit in GarageBand. I find that easy enough to use. And there's a lot of other good programs out there. Don't get me wrong. It's not probably even the best, but it's the one that I learned on. And there is this phrase, the best audio editing software is the first one you learn, because then learning the next one, there's a lot of the learning curve, and it just, okay, forget it. But I've used everything from Audacity, Adobe Audition. Probably Adobe Audition is probably the best out there. Hindenburg is really good as well. Audacity is good. But GarageBand works for me. It was on my Mac when I started 13 years ago, and I've stayed with it. I've learned all those other software over the years just so that I knew how they worked. I even wrote in another book called Podcasting 101, which is more of an updated book on the tech side on how to actually podcast rather than the art, but the technical side of it, which I show how to use Audacity in that book to keep it both for Mac and PC.
Yeah. So that's the good thing about Audacity is it doesn't matter what operating system you're using, Windows or Mac, it's irrelevant. So you've seen a lot of success stories, especially in the past few years in podcasting. What is the one common element to those successes that you perceive?
None of them did anything to market their podcast. Now, when I asked them, what did you guys do to market your podcast? Aaron Mankey at Lore, any of the ones that have been successful that came out of nowhere, they all said the same thing. I just created good content and the audience took care of promoting it for me. They put their show out there. They made sure it was on a host that could handle the bandwidth. But when you actually talk to the shows that are the big ones now that came out of nowhere to become big, most of them tell you that they spent all their time working on good content. Aaron Mankey would spend 30 hours every other week, you know, in a 2-week period to push out an episode every 2 weeks. And that was a 25-minute episode he spent 30 hours working on, doing research and content and recording and editing, but mostly research. So, you know, what I've seen talking to the biggest shows, which, because we do host them, great content. And you can't underestimate the value of that.
Yeah. Well, it's, I have a chapter, it's the content stupid, right? Because people aren't going to listen to you because you have a nice intro or outro or nice music, trailer. They're just not going to be into that. It's really connecting with them. So what do you think is the best way to connect with the person who is going to listen to your show? How do you make an impression and build a relationship? Because Cliff Ravenscraft always says you build your audience one person at a time in the most abstract sense. In reality, you're building hundreds of relationships every time you put one up there that connects. But connection is the key. So how do you best do it?
It's pretty simple things. One, have an email address that you promote that people can send you feedback. Have a call-in number that you can promote that people can send you feedback, so that makes it easy for you to play their feedback on the show. If you have a show that will allow that. But even if you have a show that's not going to allow that, having an email address where they can send you feedback and then answering those emails, either on the show or replying to them, is that building that relationship. It takes work. Have a forum group, whether it be on Google Plus or Facebook. Have this community around your show where not just you go, but where you also have the listeners go and interact with each other, and they build a community around your show for you. So community building to me is key, because those folks, once they become invested in your show, they're going to start telling their friends over and over, you got to listen to the show, got to listen to the show, got to listen to the show. And you know, making them feel like they're part of your community, part of your show, really does go a long way in word of mouth marketing.
Hey, and you know, one of the things that I love is that people, you don't think you're a celebrity, you're just an ordinary guy doing a podcast, and yet people build this connection with you. They feel like they know you. and they feel like they really are part of the show. And that to me is one of the most gratifying aspects of podcasting.
Yeah. And, you know, let a little bit out about who you are and what you do. It doesn't have to be in the beginning, shouldn't be at the beginning, but near the end of the show, people that are stuck around, give them a little bit of taste of who you are outside of what you're talking about. That was one of the things early on when I started Podcast 411. I remember I was maybe 5 or 6 months in and someone said to me, well, you never talk about yourself. You never say who you are. We haven't anything about you, because I didn't even get my last name back then. So I was like, okay, fine. You want some information? Me and my wife are trying to have a kid. It just happened to be that was the one episode my mom listened to, and I thought my mom had told my wife had told my mom, and my wife thought I had told my mom. So my mom found out we were trying to have a kid via the podcast. But you know, just letting little pieces of, you don't have to get that personal, but some stuff about, you know, hey, yeah, your kid's doing good in basketball, or maybe you are a fan of a basketball team. Just little pieces so they get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah,
really helps.
So the personalization that you get with this, it's a lot different than radio too. Mm-hmm. Radio, most people are listening to it in their car, going to and from work. And I think podcasting to some extent has become that way as well. But radio really is kind of the captive audience. You're listening to it for your traffic, for your weather, for the financial news, etc. With podcast, people are listening because they really want to hear you.
Right. And there's a big difference too in the intimacy between radio and podcasting. In podcasting, you control what you hear. So when you get to work, if you hit stop, and you get out of work and you listen on the way home, it picks right up where you left off. When you get to work and you stop and you turn off the radio, the guys at the radio station don't shut down and wait for you to get back in your car. So, you know, there's a different feel that they actually control your content. Whereas in radio, they feel they have no control. There's no real connection.
Yeah, they're strictly a consumer. And so, you know, the podcasting industry has become a multi-billion-dollar industry. It's burgeoning, more and more people getting into it. What are you seeing for the future? Because it's probably not as easy to build an audience as it once was.
You know, a lot of you say that, but that's not true. I mean, I've seen shows come out of nowhere in the last 6 months, 7 months, and build an audience if you have the right content. If it's hits a core audience that you can connect with, you can do it, but it takes work. I mean, most people, yeah, it's going to take a lot of work coming out of nowhere. If you don't have a blog or a social media background where you've got these followers, it's a lot tougher, and it's going to take a little bit of extra work and luck sometimes getting featured. In those situations where you're coming out of nowhere and you've got no background today, you're going to have to network with other podcasters. You're going to have to go on their show or have them come on your show. You're going to have to go and interview bloggers. You know, the interview is a great promotional vehicle by getting out in your niche, finding those people that are really influential, especially on the blog side of things, because there's still about a 2,000-to-1 ratio, bloggers to podcasters. So most bloggers aren't podcasting, so they don't look at you as competition. So if you come in, you're doing a show, it's on a niche, you know, you're covering chameleon breeding, go out and find every chameleon breeder podcast and interview the guy that runs those blogs and have them on your show, and then send them links to your interview and make sure you edit and make sure they sound good. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make when they do interviews is they don't edit. So they leave all the gaffes in there and all the mistakes the person said and the ums and the you knows. And then when the person goes that was interviewed and listens to it, they go, oh man, I sound so bad. I sound like an idiot. I can't believe I said ums 150 times in an hour. And guess what? They're not going to promote that interview. But if they listen to it and they go, man, I sounded good. I sounded really good. Well, they're going to tell people, go listen to me. I was on this show. I sound good. Right. So make sure you make your guests sound good. Edit them. Edit out the dead air. Edit out the gaffes and the mistakes they make.
Yeah, it's very true. The way I promoted my show, Financial Survival Network, was just interviewing all these bloggers. I also had a radio show. And every blogger out there, every website, is in a nonstop, never-ending battle to find content. And they also want their message to get out. So when you do a good interview of that blogger, whomever she might be, and she hears it and says, wow, I really sounded good, their audience becomes yours, yours becomes theirs. It's the ultimate win-win situation.
Yep, absolutely.
Right, so one thing that I've noticed is US, UK, English-speaking podcasts are way, way ahead in terms of numbers of people doing it, in terms of diversity of subjects. I had a couple of clients who've had Spanish-speaking podcasts, and they get tremendous play because they just don't have that much competition, say, in Latin America. You know, there's more people, Spanish-speaking people in Latin America than there are in the United States and the UK combined. What's your feel about international podcasting trends? What are you seeing there?
They're still a few years behind as far as adoption and awareness. So there's still an awareness issue, but there are more and more Spanish language podcasts coming up. But yeah, it's definitely an underserved market at this point. And there needs to be more Spanish language podcasts out there. We're starting to see more come on board. But at the same time, the consumption there isn't up as well because of the understanding and the awareness of podcasting in those countries. Now, it's a chicken egg thing. So you need more content for there to be more awareness, you need more hits for there to be more awareness. But it is definitely a few years behind what's happening in the US for sure.
Yeah, very true. Hey, one last thing. So YouTube, basically anybody with a smartphone or a camera, webcam, can do a video on YouTube, and it may or may not go viral. But YouTube, it just seems like the mechanics of it are so much easier to post to YouTube. Obviously, if you want to do one professionally produced, it's a lot harder. But a podcast really requires, even at this stage, Rob, some technical expertise, or at least association with somebody that has the expertise. And you need to do certain things, preferably like an intro and an outro, the editing, all of these things. It puts up certain barriers to podcasting that you don't really have in the YouTube world. Is there anything on the horizon that's going to change that to make podcasting more universal, less geeky, if you will?
Well, it is still, in some ways, it's pretty easy to podcast. I mean, you sign up for a Libsyn account, you upload artwork, you add your title description, you upload and publish your first episode, you grab the RSS feed, you submit it to iTunes. So that's it. And then after that, you just upload, add title description, publish, upload, add title description, publish, and it keeps updating. It's not as technical as people think. However, it is a lot more work to get content created that's good, because you're going to do longer form content. Typical podcast is an hour long versus typical YouTube video, which is a minute. And podcast audience on the median side of listens is a lot higher than it is for YouTube watches. Sure, there are people like, you know, that get 100 million or 200 million views on YouTube, but they're very small. The majority of the 100 million new people uploading videos on YouTube never get more than 10 or 15 views of their videos, if that. So if you actually look at the median number of listens versus views, it's higher in podcast world than it is in the YouTube world. But yes, something can go viral because it's a short little one-off thing. It's the difference between Walk Like an Egyptian and the Beatles' White Album, right? Great. You had this one little thought, Walk Like an Egyptian, we never hear from you again. But the Beatles, it was an album, and then another album, and another album. And podcasting is more like an album than it is a one-hit wonder 45.
And I find it interesting that a podcast, well, it's just like when TV came along, radio was the dominant medium. TV came along and it definitely took a lot away from radio, but actually it was a good thing because it forced radio to focus in on what it did best. And perhaps what you're describing is the fundamental difference between video and audio on the web, is that, hey, anybody could do a video of a cat and, you know, the cat lovers will make it go viral. But to talk about caring and feeding of your cat and the proper way to take care of them is really the domain of the podcast.
Yeah, and I also want to remind people, there's a lot more time in the day to consume audio than there is video. So people have more time in the day to actually consume audio than video or read a blog. So audio podcasting is not going anytime soon. I mean, people listen on the way to and from work. A lot of people listen at work while they're working. You can't watch video while you're working and actually get anything done. But you can be listening to audio and typing away and working on spreadsheets and doing other things and loading boxes or whatever it is that you're doing, or driving your truck if you're over the road trucker. There are things you can do and work and listen, but you can't do that while you're watching videos. So there's a lot more opportunity today when you're working out, walking the dog, doing yard work, that you can be consuming a audio podcast that you can't be watching a YouTube video. So yes, YouTube videos have these stumble upon, people sit down and it's that. But it's not the intimacy that you can still get with podcasting, because podcasting, people are listening with earbuds in, it's in the middle of their head, it's a longer form content. It's a lot different feel on the podcast side than the YouTube side. We have a lot of YouTubers that come over and they do podcasts, and you know, they'll talk about, oh, I got 150,000 subscribers, and I got these numbers, I got those numbers, and they come over and they can't even get 2,500 people listening to their podcast.
Yeah, so true. And look, you can't be watching a YouTube when you're riding down I-95 in Broward County in Florida, or you'll quickly become a statistic on the road there. Hey, one final thing for a podcaster, if you're starting out today, what advice would you give? Rob, you're the voice of experience here.
Do a show that you want to watch or listen to. You know, what is it that you really like? What podcast do you listen to right now? What is it that you're passionate about? Don't do a podcast because it's a topic that's hot. I mean, don't do a true crime podcast and you've never watched Quincy or Rockford Files or any of the detective shows growing up, and all of a sudden now you want to do a true crime podcast because that's what's hip. All right. That's not for you. What is it that you actually really listen to? And it's okay to do a podcast that's basically the same as what you're listening to. I always talk about people saying, you know, I Dream a Genie. What's I Dream a Genie and the Munsters? Well, they're just Bewitched and Addams Family. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same exact show. But what was different was Barbara Eden brought her personality to I Dream a Genie, which was different than Elizabeth Montgomery's at Bewitched. So if you do a show that you like, already listen to, you're going to bring your personality, which will make it different. And there's okay, there's enough time in the week for people to listen to two of the same shows. And maybe your show will be even more successful. So it's okay to copy, so to speak, another show that you like. You don't have to be completely original. Matter of fact, it's probably impossible to be completely original.
Yeah.
And you definitely don't want to jump on a trend that is the hot thing. So do what you like, not what's hot. And I think that will last, because it's a lot. It is work. It is work to do a podcast. Don't mistake that one bit. If you've done some viral videos where you've shot and think, okay, now I'm going to go do a podcast, it's more work than just quickly doing a quick little video.
That is a great point. And you raise another point kind of indirectly, but we'll kind of leave it at that. But when people listen to you, sure, they're listening for the content, but they're listening to your show. All right. There's something about the way you do it that has gotten you, your listener, to actually become part of your community. And there might be 50 other shows on wines, but you just do it a little bit differently, and you do it funny, or you just are irreverent or something else like that, and it just clicks. And first and foremost, they're listening to you. Hey, Rob, we want to connect with you. People want to find out more about Libsyn. Where do they go?
Simple. Just email me, ROB, as in Robert, ROB, Rob at Libsyn, LIBSYN.com, or they can go to Libsyn.com and see more about Libsyn there. And they can also go to podcast411.com, which is my original podcast.
Excellent. Hey, and if you got any questions for Rob, myself, be part of the show. Love getting your emails, KL@KerryLutz.com. Rob, been a pleasure. Keep up the great work. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Kerry, thanks so much for having me on.
This has been another episode of Viral Podcasting. Be sure to visit us at viralpodcasting.com.